Ed Schocke here on Q at 102 FM, and we'll get into our interview with John Anderson to set it up. I'll tell you later on about the first two nights of the Yes Tour, which I just came back from, Toledo and Wheeling. But to put it all in chronological order, this interview was done about a week ago. John Anderson and the rest of the boys had just come over from England or wherever they were, Switzerland. In fact, John had just been on vacation in the south of France for about a month. And while he was there, as a matter of fact, he recorded some what he calls experimental music, just with a harp and various other instruments, with John overdubbing all of the tracks himself. And he played it in the background. Through this tape, you will hear this sort of strange music playing, and that is this experimental piece previously unheard anywhere. Like, it was just recorded in the south of France, and you'll hear that in the background, so you know that. And we just went out there. Well, here's what happened. Yes was in the country to rehearse for about a week. They were somewhere in the area of Philadelphia, not in Philadelphia, but somewhere in the boondocks, in a secret location, just rehearsing. A lot of bands do that. So that's what they were doing. And I found John the first day they were in, first full day. They hadn't actually started to rehearse. And he's a little bit anxious about the fact that they hadn't started. They were going to get started immediately, in fact, the next day. Rick Wakeman had made the new album with them, Going for the One, so they had played together and worked together and composed together, but they hadn't actually started to rehearse the old material, which is really going to be very crucial on this tour, because people want to hear, you know, the old tunes and what they sounded like with Rick again, you know. So here we go with John Anderson. Some of the questions that he doesn't quite answer, because they haven't happened yet, I can maybe answer later on. So let's just get right into it. John Anderson of Yes and me in a hotel room, just sort of being very mellow. Welcome back to America, John.
Here we are.
An opening as any. Here we are in the United States
of America.
You were in Switzerland now for quite a while.
Just before Christmas, we went to Switzerland and stayed there for about 5 months and did a lot of skiing and enjoying ourselves, as well as making our new album.
Oh, you made a new album?
Yeah, we just kind of thought, well, we haven't really done anything for 2 years now, you know, and the business people are saying, come on, Yes, you haven't done anything for 2 years, you know, this. And we say, well, yeah, our solo idea as well. What a lot of rubbish that was all about. Yes is more important, they say. So we probably jump up and jump into a studio. And as a matter of course, we were going to make an album anyway. And as a matter of course, we all got very involved in our solo projects. And I hope that a bit rubbed off on certain people. You can't please all of the people all of the time, and you can please some of the people some of the time.
When I left you after I spent the last week of the tour going to I don't know where.
I don't remember where.
Wherever it was, we ended up in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Mm-hmm.
And then flew back, and it seemed to me that everything was real nice. I mean, you know, Patrick was, everybody was happy and everything, and I was quite shocked, and I really haven't talked to you about it since then, about the departure of Patrick.
Yeah.
And Rick's return, but I mean, what do you have to say now about it? I mean, I guess it's old news now, but
not really. I haven't spoke about it that much, and I know that
you've been working with Rick now again.
Yeah. Patrick was very, very good to work with, and very a gentleman, a real nice man. I think on the last American tour, he started to realize that maybe his future didn't lie with Yes, and now he's just brought out another solo album, which is a very good album, and I think that's the way his career has always leant towards. He's a leader, and possibly finds it a little bit difficult to be led in the group of Yes, you know, not that we don't lead people, but we present ourselves with situations, and I think just before Christmas, there was a time when Patrick wasn't really happy with his music on the new album, and so I spoke to him and tried to make him realise that it might be just a bad time he's going through, and we were feeling it, that he wasn't too happy and it didn't sound that good. And he said he thought he should leave, and it was a difficult time because we seem to change someone in the group every time we do an album, and here we are again making a new album, and here is Patrick wanting to leave. So eventually we sat down and realised it would be better for him and better for the band if he left, because no point in him staying just because it's Yes, you know, because he has to stay with Yes, and it doesn't mean it, you know, it doesn't really mean anything. So we were presented with a situation of Rick coming back into the band just about Christmas time, so he came over for a day. I asked him to come over, listen to the music. If he liked it, we'd be very happy if he played on it. We didn't really want to commit him to joining the band again. But he came over, and in his usual humorous self, you know, he kind of knocked us all over. And he said, it's great music, he wants to rejoin the band. And that turned us on a lot, because I think we were a little worried that our music at this point maybe it wasn't quite the right music for the time, but I think when Rick came back and explained how he felt about the music, we were ready. We said, oh, that's good. And we were very happy to have him back in the band, and we're very happy to be back on tour with a new album.
From Yes Song, this is Roundabout Live with Rick Wakeman. Of course, you hear that, done that way again. It's really, really jumping Rick Wakeman back on keyboards in Yes after an absence of 3.5 years or thereabouts. In fact, we'll definitely try to get Rick up here one of these days. Tell us about his feelings now that he's back with Yes. You're on cue at 102 FM. Ed Schocke here, back now to more of John Anderson, recorded within the last week, with some experimental music playing in the background. Coming up tonight at midnight, our LP on cue will be the entire new Yes LP called Going for the One.
How much did Rick contribute to the album?
Very much. The situations were very open. We'd written most of the music, but the soloing areas were very non-committed. We decided certain ideas could come out. But Rick, you know, he just kind of comes in and takes over the keyboard job. It relieves me of a lot of thought about what kind of sounds are needed. And I can just relax and let him do what he wants. And obviously at times on the album, we got together very, very closely, like we were on Fragile, where we have a complete union, where I don't have to say exactly what I'm trying to feel in my head. I can just look at him and say, this kind of thing is needed, and he just plays it automatically because he's in tune with me and I'm in tune with him, if you like. And that was happening on Fragile and Close to the Edge, and a little bit on Topographic. I think the main reason why he left was because he didn't get into Topographic. The main reason why he's come back is because he can get into this new album and the way we are thinking these days, you know.
You think you've changed your thinking more in his direction?
No, I'm changing my thinking. That's the first thing I said to you. Changed, Rick.
Right.
I mean, I really like you very much, but my ideals in music have not changed, and they won't change, because I know I'm now very, very lucky and fortunate to have made my own album on my own, and that is a pointer to my future other than Yes. And I think Yes, hopefully, will carry on making the music that it's enjoyed for, liked for, and watched and listened for, rather than the possible motivation of things like Relayer were possibly my energy trying to, through other people, musically create something. And on Relayer, I think we created a good piece of music. Admittedly, the actual recording was very different. It was a very subdued kind of recording, and a very subdued cover, very grey. I think that was the colour of the band at the time. And it was an interesting situation, because who's to say that is the right or wrong thing to do that kind of music? In the business, it's wrong because it's not commercial, but that's the game we have to play.
You know, but it really wasn't that far removed from what you had to do.
Topographic,
you know?
Relayer. There was a strong movement in topographic, where here we were with a lot of ideas and a large amount of music to contend with. And I'd say at that point in time, the fans of Yes either stuck with us for what we are and what we'll always be, or decided, listen, you know, music shouldn't be too heavy, man. Which I can dig very much, but at the time, and still in the back of my mind, it was the right thing to do, and we tried to develop it by putting on a staging, a show, a theatre, and it developed and developed since then. And it's always crossed my mind as to why, in that time when Yes we had such a strong following, did a piece of music change all that? And I think topographic made the people that understand Yes get really behind Yes, whatever it tries to do. And those are the fans that save us, if you like, for this new album, which I think is a little bit easier to listen to. It's got the same ingredients that are always in Yes music. I think it's a very much better production than Relayer. But it has, for those fans that didn't quite get off on the last few years, I think it's got that ingredient that they might even come back and say, well, yeah, I can dig Yes now for a while, you know, see what they do next. And,
yeah, it separates the hardcore fans from the casual roundabout fans.
The more fans that we reach, the more people we reach, the better, obviously, we feel. We don't sit down and say, right, we are going to reach so many fans this year. We just do our music and hope that it touches everybody. And when it doesn't, the only way we can regulate the fact that it doesn't is by the record sales and the critical situation in the music press, because that is a good guide as to how generally people feel.
Yeah, I
in what retrospect, am I saying? What am I going on about all this for?
I don't know, but
hey, slow down.
You know,
man.
I had to.
You're on tour, you know.
You explained.
Watch it.
You explained topographic once for me for about an hour.
Yeah.
But I had to hold the tape for about a year before I thought people were ready to hear it, you know?
Really?
So when Relayer was ready to come out, I finally played the topographic. I said, I think now you had a year to listen to it. You're about ready to hear the explanation. I mean, I love topographic, but, you know, I think that if there were problems, it was in the length of the size and so on. You know?
Yeah.
Because a lot of it has to do with getting played. As far as reaching other than you, the fans, there's a certain number of people that are going to go out and buy anything you put out, right?
Mm.
You know, but there are the other casual people that perhaps would buy the album, but if they don't hear it or they don't, you know, have a chance to get into it, then they may not, you know. They may say, well, that's a little bit too deep for me. Relayer, I think, was more accessible, and in fact, it had Sound Chaser, which I think is probably the most progressive piece of music you've ever done.
Yeah.
I love Sound Chaser. I think it's powerful, and I think it's progressive and dynamic and everything. I mean, it really is a really incredible piece of music.
It's a 25 cents.
Thank you.
It was good on stage. I always remember
was,
when we were,
the record was good
when we were doing
too.
It on stage, and it was dynamite to do on stage.
Was but you think that that was your, was it was, I mean, do you take the credit or blame for that stuff?
I was thinking before, what am I being? Am I being defensive?
Right.
Here? Yeah, I think I'll be defensive a little bit. Yeah, it was my fault.
No.
I had this a lot of energy. And happily, I could work through other musicians and hopefully give ideas And obviously with Steve and Chris and Alan and Rick at the time on Fragile, or with Bill on Fragile and Close to the Edge, we were all very happy about our success. And I think I was very pleased about it. So the music that was coming out was very pleasing. And then I started to think possibly, well, wait a minute, you know, why me? What did I do to deserve all this kind of thing, you know, with a band? There must be some reason behind it. So I started looking well into myself, and eventually my coming out, how do you say in America when you come out of your, you know, your, when you come out of college?
Graduation.
Yes. Was Elias.
Uh-huh.
I went very deep into trying to figure out what's all this about now. I was in music for a long time, I know.
Did you figure it out?
Oh, yeah.
Well, why do you think you? Then why you?
Well, that will come out later. I mean, but, you know, why do you have Joe Namath?
Yeah, I mean, I realize it's difficult for you to talk about yourself like that. But the thing is, you're not a trained musician.
I am now.
But you aren't.
Become a musician in a sort of way. I don't play music in the you know, schooled fashion. So I just make music as it comes and the way it feels, and I hear it, and now I can play it, and it's a very happy situation for me.
But when you started composing, you didn't. You were not really a musician.
I just trained in the sense of classical training.
So it has to, where does it come from? And yet you've come up with this incredible wealth of music, and where do you think it comes from? It just comes from inside you. I mean,
well, it's all there. It's in the air. You see, it's who wants to reach up and get hold of it. You see, it's like anything. You know, it's anything's possible. Star Wars.
Yes.
I mean, really, I haven't seen it yet, but I can imagine anything's possible if you want it enough, I suppose. And I do want something. And in the back of my mind, I know what it is, but to explain it, it's another thing.
Yeah.
It's the need to, I don't know, it's entertainment. But as I've said before, I always feel like I'm sitting there watching the group, even though I never actually visually see it. When I'm up there on stage, I feel that I basically want the audience to get off on what's happening, whether it be a fearful feeling, a very deep, thoughtful feeling, a very happy feeling, a very sensual feeling, which isn't something that you readily find in Yes music, but it's somewhere there, if you look. Because the ingredients of all music is the senses, so it's, hopefully it's got to touch more than just, you know, the happy-go-lucky, disco, jazz. All these kind of musics are, hopefully, the essence of Yes, because we've all got a lot of different ideas about music. Some are very classically orientated. You know, I like classics, jazz, and all sorts of things, you know. And so the ingredients of the band formulate the music of Yes.
The thing that fascinates me, I was thinking of, maybe it's not quite right, but a similarity between you and the Beatles, for instance. I had thought of this earlier in terms of if the Beatles, you know, what if the Beatles hadn't made it big on the silly, you know, She Loves You type stuff, we wouldn't have had Sgt. Pepper and on to their great works. And I think that if you hadn't, I mean, you know, what if you hadn't made that first album of, which was basically arranged pop music, you perhaps wouldn't have had the chance to, you probably wouldn't have had the chance to create, or at least have known Close to the Edge or Topographic or your major works.
Yeah.
And that's really interesting to me. And you're so dependent on the pop music business, you know.
Yeah.
To accomplish what inevitably has very little to do with the pop music business, you know, which is the music.
Yeah, the business doesn't have an avenue for musicians that maybe lean towards more expansion in music rather than... Mm-hmm. It's not really highbrow to say that. I mean, there's so many good musicians doing good pop music, good disco music, and really we don't have to do that kind of music because I enjoy other people doing it. If I didn't enjoy other people doing it, I'd go and do it. Do you know what I mean? But because I don't hear certain kinds of music, I go for that. Mm-hmm. I go in that direction because I don't hear anybody else doing it. And that's the direction I'm trying to get into, where you become very, you can stand on your own two feet and say, well, that is my style of music, if you like. And yes, it has its own music now. It took a while to develop, but it has its own style of music. And I think I'm going for the one, the new album.
It's available on Atlantic Records.
Available on Atlantic Records, in your local record store. This is going out in Philadelphia,
right.
Is it? If there's any place, it's crazy old Philadelphia. Whoever's listening, I hope you get the chance to hear the album, possibly see the show. And,
well, we'll be playing the album all the way through at midnight tonight.
Oh, good.
Right. Okay, so they'll hear it at least.
Well, say okay. No more.
Well, we will say some more in a bit with John Anderson. Yeah, not so much the leader. He sort of is, but he's sort of the co-founder and the spiritual inspiration for Yes, as well as the main composer, lyricist, and so on. Hope you're enjoying it. John Anderson of Yes with us on Q at 102 FM. Ed Shockey here. We'll be back with John in a moment.
Yes. And Yes again this Tuesday and Wednesday at the Spectrum with legendary troubadour Donovan. Yes, featuring John Anderson, Chris Squire, Steve Howe, Alan White, and rejoined by Rick Wakeman, plus Donovan, a triumphant return. Reserve seats 650, 750, and 850, and available now at Ticketron and the usual locations. For information about all Electric Factory concerts, dial LOVE 222.
You're on Q, WIOQ Philadelphia. Ed Shockey here. Continuing now our talk with John Anderson of Yes. Coming up at midnight tonight, LP on Q presents... the new Yes LP, Going for the One.
No, how about the album you were talking about?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of ingredients in the album that are the main essences of Yes music. It's got a heavy rock, very light storytelling sort of thing, and some very weighty kind of orchestral movements, you know. And these are the strong things in Yes that have developed over the years, and now is a good time for this maybe a little bit freer music. As I said before, I feel that I've freed myself of one burden, if you like, and that was the inability to make music on my own. I always had to talk to other musicians and try to explain what I was thinking in the back of my head. Now that I can actually do it on my own, I have a release, and I'm not going to rush out and do an album on my own next year or the year after. I'm going to do it later on when I'm ready, because now I can see where I want to go. So happily that's going on, and in a way Yes can carry on, hopefully on a stronger, touching more people basis. Mm-hmm. I hope. Well, it's not easy to, it's easy to say that. Whether in reality it will happen, I really don't know. I'd love it to happen that way.
I remember we were talking about this last summer about you were starting to work on the new album.
Yeah.
and saying that you wanted it to be a little more accessible. I think that I'm very happy with the new album. I think it's exactly what you wanted it to be. Maybe make the whole concept more concise.
Yeah.
Rather than it's certainly not a sellout. It's not a commercial sellout type
no,
of album.
No,
at
no.
All.
To sell it's, out is like Don Revy, who's an English football manager. You know, he sold out. He went to the Arabs. I mean, you can't play football in sand very well. But that's a home country's joke.
Uh-huh.
To sell out, I don't know. It's
well, whatever.
It's a crazy world.
If you changed your style to the extent that it became a bastardization of your music,
oh, yeah.
then that would
you
be
you can't
what
do
I,
that. You
right.
wouldn't release it.
And I don't think you have.
No.
I think it's more concise and there are
yeah.
shorter tracks and so on and more. It's more accessible. Although Awaken is certainly as complex as anything.
It's your big yes music. It's
your
got
big,
a,
your
yeah,
major
it's,
yes.
Yeah, it's the big thing in a way. I was thinking the other day that it would be fantastic to do a dance album, you know, a disco album, but yes music, you know?
Right.
And that's crazy because it all it is the rhythm that keeps you occupied when you're dancing. And
well, Sound Chaser is
the young lady in front of you.
Sound Chaser is
the young man.
Is your.
Yeah,
right.
Well, Sound Chaser is basically what it is.
It's a disco hit, right?
Well, there's certain parts of it could be difficult.
But it is rhythm. It's rhythm.
Yeah, but tempo changes aren't easy to dance to.
Right.
I can dance to everything we've ever done. And I know there's a lot of people out there when we play, they're dancing.
Right.
But there's not that many dancers in that kind of vogue. Everybody wants to go bop, bop.
Well, you
bop,
look
bop,
a little
bop,
funny
bop,
when
bop.
You're dancing to this.
Well, yeah.
Did you?
I look a little funny anyway.
Well, you know,
you
look okay.
A matter of...
your solo album, then, Elias, I mean, that was just all you. I mean, what do you think of that now, 2 years later?
I'll always enjoy it because it was an experience, total experience, of being on my own in my little studio and having a lot of dreams and a lot of thoughts going on in my mind. And I feel... It was a start of something that I'm going to be doing in later life. I believe so. I would love to feel that because my energy is going in that direction. I'm working towards it in my mind that I'd like to try something again. not in the same vein as Elias, because Elias was a very... it was a story. And the music had to be set around the story. I was being self-explanatory. I was explaining the story to myself as I made the music. I was trying to figure out where I was going, and it all came together eventually. And
well, does its lack of great commercial success bother you?
No. I hope that whoever listens to that album, whoever bought the album, and enjoyed it, and that's the main thing. If they enjoyed it, I'm happy. And the more they enjoy it, the more happy I am. Whoever I spoke to about it, I can see what they feel about what I did, and it's it was a very exciting time of my career. Commercial for it to be a commercial success would have been an added bonus. Just actually make it was the thing, and release it in the way it was released. I did enjoy very much the cover work, the artwork, and the actual way it came out. It was just right. There's no need for it to be a 10 million seller, a million seller. It's not. There's a saying, what is it called? You don't give to receive. And that's all I've been trying to do. And in receiving, I was, in a way, as I was giving, I received at the same time. And that's what happened. And I'm very pleased about that.
Flight of the Moorglade from John Anderson's solo LP called Elias of Sun Hill. It wasn't a total stiff. It sold, actually, of the five Yes solo albums, including Patrick Mraz's album, John sold the best. Elias of Sun Hill was the biggest hit of all, although it didn't do anywhere near what most of the Yes albums have done, but that's all right. The album with Roundabout Fragile has sold about 4 million copies, which is... not bad, not bad at all. In fact, I think Boston's only up to about 4 million now, something like that. Only 3 million. I see that? Well, you see. Anyway, while we're talking about solo albums, solo efforts from John Anderson. Sure, he'd just love me to play this for you. This is a thing that he recorded years ago. This was before Yes got started. This was back around 1967. And John, having just come to London, recorded this tune under the name of Hans Christian Andersen. And he really was into the association, and he decided to cover this old association tune. Rather strange. El Strangio. That's John Anderson as Hans Christian Andersen in 1967. It only was 2 years later that Yes got started, and this is what John sounded like on the very first Yes LP. You at 102 FM with Ed Schocke here, back to our conversation with John Anderson. Now coming up at midnight tonight, the complete new Yes LP, Going for the One on LP on Q.
A couple of years ago, you sang me a little bit of what was on High Vibration.
Yeah, right.
You remember?
Yeah.
And that was a fragment that you had around the time of Relayer. And now that has become Awaken.
Yeah.
You want to go through the tracks on the new album?
Okay.
Where, I think it's interesting to see perhaps where, aside from who wrote them or whatever, is when they were created and how they evolved, you know.
Going for the One was a song I wrote 3 years ago, 3 or 4 years ago. And it was always one of these songs we'd start rehearsing for a tour or rehearsing for an album, and I'd stand there and say, how about this then? Sing this song. It's why I'm punished, isn't it? I can't say that now, you have to lie. Anyway. And you didn't really tag along. And then the last time we were on in Switzerland, I played it again, and they all said, hey, that's a good rocker, that one, let's do that. And I said, yeah, well, let's get down and do it. And it was all ready, and I just got the lyrics together on it. And it was, as you say, it was a real rocking, boogie kind of thing, and Alan's kicking away, and everybody's pushing. So it does come out as a very, very high-tensioned rocker, rather than a laid-back rocker. It is a high-power piece of music. And then the Hollywood ending, which I like, you know, the old, ah, where we just talk about sending love. Anyway, then we got into Turn of the Century, which is a song, again, 3 years ago, me and Alan were together, and we wrote this song.
It's beautiful, beautiful.
I'm glad you like that. Because it did take a long time to get that together, because it was initially it was a very simple song, over three chords, and I had this idea that we needed a melodic shape in and around the actual song, so the song could follow the melodic shape, and then after the song finished, the melodic piece would carry on and be repeated, a tune. And Steve helped by coming along with this piece of music in the same chord structure. And eventually it came out that it was possibly the most difficult song to sing on the album, because it isn't a slightly new venture for me to try and sing in that frame of mind. It's like storytelling in a way, and yet I was, I don't know, trying to get close to a certain feeling. It's very hard to explain what the feeling is, but if you listen to the track, you might.
The lyrics are more literal than you've been doing.
That was the main idea. I had to tell this story that I read about a while ago about the old sculptor doing the stone model of his wife who dies, and she comes to life through his strength of love for the marble that he's working on. And when you've been in a lyrical atmosphere of I don't know, total freedom in the lyrical content of all the albums that Yes have done, I've been relatively free to feel my way as I want to. And I think I've created a certain style, you know, a certain style. It's it's something that comes very strong, I think, on Awake, and that kind of style. Statement. Everything is a statement. And on Turn of the Century, I needed to really relax into a little bit of the story. And that's where... So you have a very alternate situation. You have a very strong rocker recording for the one, and then a very light piece, which if you want to, you can drift along with, and hopefully you'll enjoy it. And then we go into Parallels, which is Chris's song. And in that we have the church organ and things. It's a very heavy piece of music, very strong. I'd say very, very dominant, very good stage number, very Yes kind of music. The songwriting from Chris came more out on his own album.
Yeah.
As you said, it sounded more like a Yes album than any other album of the band.
Yeah.
Because I think Chris has been, like myself, with the band from the very beginning. So the ingredient that Chris puts in is possibly more on the musical level. Me more on the dreaming kind of level, possibilities. As you hear on Parallels, it's straightforward, here we go, this is the music. Whereas as far as my kind of ideas go, they get into different kind of ideas, different kind of, I look for different things. And
Was this a new tune of Chris's, or did he have it?
I'm not sure. I think he's had it for maybe a while.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. He just came along one day and he played a cassette to us, and it really sounded good. We got the church organ together and went off and played it.
That was the one where Rick did it by telephone.
Yeah, that's right. And 10 miles away in a church. Beautiful church. And one of the stories was a song that I just put together one day while we were in the studio. This tune came, I thought, oh gosh, that's really nice, and the lyrics came very fast, and the catch line of Wonder Stories was something, a little bit what I was thinking about in the back of my mind, about the idea of being able to tell a few more stories as they come along, you know, and here was this man who told the most wondrous stories, who could take you to the heavens if you want to go. And as it happens, when I go, I get to the gate and I decide it's a bit too... I've got to go and have another listen. Just want to make sure everything's okay. So, a nice little tune. I like doing that. And then we got into the main... I call it the main track of the album, which was Awaken. It was a track that we started planning last year when we were on tour. I walked into Steve's bedroom one... evening, late evening, and I was going to tell a terrible joke then, but I won't. I can't. And he was playing this beautiful line, which goes da 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 da, and I started thinking about that. And we sat down and worked out some ideas, and I explained I had this kind of chant-like idea, and I couldn't actually work out the chords at the time, so Steve helped me on the chords there, and that made the basis of the whole idea of the track. And one of the good things, I think, in listening back again to Awaken is the freedom offered to Steve and Rick. It gives them the chance, Steve especially, to be heavy into it. It's a very heavy rock feel that he gets into after the second verse. And then where Rick has the chance to develop is in that very slow, delicate area where I get the chance to play my harp for the first time on any Yes album. You can actually hear in the background a harp, and it's me and Alan going plong, 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 which I do enjoy doing.
You think you'll be doing most, if not all, the album?
I believe we're going to try and do most of the album. I know that whenever we sit down and discuss a show, there's never enough time, and we don't want to keep people there too long.
Well, in Philadelphia, you could stay all night.
Yeah, I'd love to, really. But sometimes it's always very delicate, you know, who wants to stay.
Well, you have to do topographic all the way through again now that Rick is back, right?
Yeah. Maybe one day we might even do something. I don't know. Maybe a film. I don't know. That was just off the top of my head.
Yeah.
Or the bottom of my feet.
Do you think, have you thought at all about what the show will be?
We try to work towards the... because we didn't do Close to the Edge on the last tour, and I think the tour before, I'm not sure. No, we didn't do it for the tour before either. And last year I said, I can't wait to do Close to the Edge again. So we're going to be doing that. And then Andrew and I, which we haven't done for a while.
Probably you won't be doing anything from Topographic or Relay, right?
No.
What a surprise.
Well, there you go. In some ways, it's not from the want of wanting to do that music. It's just that we have a new album.
Mm-hmm.
The music on it is very good. And we want to play it on stage. And the music that we know would be enjoyable for Rick and the group is the music we're going to try and do. I think, we've all learned a little bit. It's not easy to go out on stage and do 80 minutes worth of new music. But for the people that did enjoy it, I'm always very happy. But I'm always very... I always get into the old doubts. I've got a few doubts, like everybody else, you know. But... it was a great time and a very enthralling time. A lot of experience was gained.
On Cute 102 FM, back to our conversation, the conclusion, in fact, of our conversation with John Anderson.
I think the last tour special you did real well. I think
marvelous. That was the turning point of a lot of things, because I know that the music industry wasn't very, very overwhelmed by the fact that we wanted to do our solo ventures, and they weren't overwhelmed by our 2 years before that, the Topographic Relay period. They weren't very pleased with that because it didn't make that much money for them. But as I was thinking before, as many a letter I get that would say, you know, don't... feel bad about some of the things you've done, because you'll always, you know, you can't always be right in what you're doing, and I think that's all right. And I would only hope that the people who enjoy what we do maybe understand us that little bit more, and as some great prophet once said, do not be afraid of showing your mistakes. Be proud of your mistakes, because you show something of yourself.
Well, people also like to speculate that the solo albums meant that there would not be any more Yes, you know, and that was also horrifying.
We planned it very carefully. We made sure that we were going to have the time. We allocated 4 months each. We said, okay, for the next 4 months, let's get on with our things, because if we don't get it out of our systems, it's not going to be good for us.
Did that have an impact on you personally, on your idea of the fact that Rick went off to do his solo albums, and how that felt like? Because I remember years ago you were talking about the possible conflict with Rick's solo albums, with the group, and you wanted him to devote full time to the group, and then you later went on and you each did your solo albums.
I think one thing that me and Rick, when we sat down, had a beer and sat down and talked about things, we both learned two things, which I think is very interesting. He learned what it's like to run a band, which is my gig in a way. I don't actually run it, but there's a lot of responsibility comes my way, and he found out what that's like, and I found out what it's like to be able to do solo work, and it's enlightening, because you get, all of a sudden, you don't rely on other people, and they don't rely on you. You are your own master, and that's something that Rick had found early on in his career. Because of his musicianship, he was good enough to do his own work, And at the time, I was on the threshold of venturing into the unknown of this large-scale piece of music, and there was our situation. He didn't want to, in some ways, he wanted to find out what it was like to lead a group, and I wanted to find out what it was like to do a solo album, and never the twain shall meet.
Hmm. Was it an ego clash back there between
so,
you? Yeah. And you've resolved that now. I understand you. You and Rick are great friends.
Like two peas in a pod.
Yes.
Well, we were great friends up until that one moment in time.
Yeah.
And we'd always had a great sense of warmth for each other, and we have it there, and it's still there. It'll always be there now that we know we can have a little battle now and again, but it won't be the same. We've had our battle, and it might come out in, you know, in other fashions, but I know that working with everybody in the group, it does have its ups and downs. It's sometimes it's most enlightening, and sometimes it's most frightening.
Mm.
That's because I'm a poet at times. That's why I said that.
And a painter at times.
Oh, painter, yeah. Yes. So, in a lot of ways, it's always exciting to work in amongst such fine musicians that we have in the band. And but I have to say, one never knows what's going to happen the following day or what's around the corner. I'd like to believe that the band can stay together for a long, long time and give a lot of pleasure to a lot of people. Now, that's what I, in the depths of my soul, would love to happen. And if it comes about, and it won't be from the want of trying, that it doesn't come about.
Mm.
Because we're very lucky. We're very lucky to be doing what we're doing. And we come here every year, and I come and say hello to you, Ed. And I come and sit here and talk to you. And I never really understand that much about how people react to what I've been saying. You know, I just hope that everybody enjoys what we do, you know.
Well, I can tell you that people do appreciate hearing what you have to say, you know, and I.
But do they understand?
No,
I don't.
At all.
I don't
no,
understand.
No, they do. I think they do, and I think that you are eloquent in your way at expressing your feelings in a way that is surprising only in its honesty. I think that, you know, you. This is
another 25 cents with you now.
Right, but I mean, these talks that we've had over the years they're considered unique. I consider them unique, but I think from a listener's viewpoint, it is so far removed from the average rock and roll rap. Well, hi, John, here's your new album, and it's, I appreciate the fact that you open up to me and that I can pass that along to them, and I think that they realize that says a lot about you, you know, about your being honest about these things, you know, and talking, trying to express a lot of ideas that are hard to express.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So, and now we've analyzed the discussion that we've had. So.
And we'll organize now.
We'll, I guess, say adieu, and we'll see you tomorrow night and Wednesday night.
Oh, really?
At the Spectrum.
Gosh.
What is the staging going to look like? Do you know?
I've seen it happening, and it's really very, very good. I think there's always that delicate area where, again, you know, the people don't want to see too much grossness and too much bigness.
So it won't be the big monsters and stuff?
No, no. Not that they were gross, but
they were
on the verge. Yeah, I was thinking that in England, every time we speak to the press, which isn't very often, we spoke to them last week, they say, why do you have these big shows? And I say, it's taken a while, but these days, it's an event for a lot of people to get together. It's become natural for Americans to do it. It's becoming natural now for English people to do it, European people to do it, to get 20, 30, 40,000 people together every week, every other week. And if that isn't getting together via music, via the big show,
You're talking about the size of the place that you're
Yeah, the big places and whatever.
But you're returning to the Spectrum this time.
Yeah.
Which is intimate compared to JFK Stadium.
I think JFK was ginormous.
What did you think of that, man? What do you think now?
At the time, I was overawed by the whole thing.
Yeah.
It was a spectacle.
In fact,
it was like we'd come to see all those people. Really, we were very lucky and privileged to see so many people so together. I mean, it was a very difficult day because it got very hot and very cold.
Yeah.
And, but in the end, you know, wow, it was amazing. I think I went back to the hotel afterwards and sat there for half an hour, which I don't normally do. I'm usually very energetic. After a show, I'm very quick to have a chat, but I just sat there and I couldn't quite figure out where I was. I was literally shaking. I wasn't nervous. It was just an experience that was very the energy that was abound at that night, that afternoon with Peter and the bands mm-hmm. that were playing, and the energy that was happening in that stadium was beautiful.
You know, of course, that Bruce Springsteen was on stage, on the side of the stage while you were playing.
No, he wasn't.
Yes, he was.
I thought he was going to come on and do Darren.
Well, he didn't, but I know you want him to, right?
Oh, great.
But he said, what? He looked out into the audience, he says, what's all that in? And that was the fires, you know.
Oh, yeah, that was difficult.
Which was weird.
And the full moon came up, you remember?
Yeah.
The full moon was coming up. We were halfway through Gates of Delirium. It was a vicious kind of attacking kind of music.
The wind was blowing fiercely.
And the wind was happening, and gosh, it was very, very, it was amazing. It really was amazing, and it was it's one of them things that you cannot forget.
Yeah. Would you do it again? Well, you're not doing it again.
We're not going to do it again. I don't think, to be quite honest, it wasn't my idea.
You don't take the blame on that one.
No, it wasn't a question of blame. I was just saying it wasn't my idea. So whoever comes up with the idea again, I want to talk to him. I mean, to have so many people together, I definitely play in the afternoon. But you know what?
Yeah.
The thing about Yes, it is changing a little bit. We always wanted to put on our show, the thing we brought from England, this idea of a show. And in some ways, it would have been easier for the audience if we'd have gone in the warmth.
Yeah.
But we thought it was going to be a warm evening.
Yeah. And you just wanted the effect of the lights on.
Yeah, the lights, the lasers and everything.
We have lasers this time, by the way.
I think we're going to be using, we've got some different kind of effects. And hopefully it'll be intriguing because lasers now are used. I think they're good because there's news that laser beams are going to be projected towards satellites and stars and projected back and used by airplanes for fuel, which is interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So lasers just aren't the old light show, folks.
Yeah.
It's going to be a little bit different, I think you'll find out. I think you'll find out something to your advantage.
Uh-huh.
Great expectations, folks.
Uh-huh.
I feel I've changed a little bit. In a few ways, and whether this will come over on stage, I don't know. When all said and done, I am the singer with Yes. I write the songs.
I
write a few songs. Yeah, I'm not sure about that lyric. It's okay.
Some of the
people. Well, about, what is it, 120... a great English comedian once said, it's great getting an award like this. He was awarded the medal for MBE or something. He says, but it's a very sobering thought when you think that 200 million Chinese have never heard of my name. So, I mean, we're a small part of a very small business. Well, it's not that small, but it's a pretty big business,
pretty big,
but we're a small part.
Yeah. It puts you, I guess it it humbles you a little bit when you think of it in those terms.
Yeah.
But on the other hand,
but
you know,
just to be able to touch the people that we do is amazing anyway for us, for me as a new.
But you are one of the giants, and to say that you're a small part of it, I mean, you're still one of the major.
Well, when when you walk in a record store,
yeah,
I mean,
there's
really, and everyone has got something to say. You know,
when the clerk recognizes you and asks you to autograph his album, then you know you've hit the people that.
Yeah, it's only because he was told by that other guy who just happens to be a Yes fan.
No, no. No, he knew.
I know what you mean. Anyway, all this is real garbage.
Really,
I mean, we've really got to
totally
the dregs, haven't we?
But thank you, and we'll see it. You know, the spectrum.
Yeah, thank you very much.
And welcome back. It's really good to have Yes back again, and it's nice to have Rick. It's all right to have Rick back. Yeah.
That's what it's about.
Thank you, John, and thank you, as usual, you know, for everything.
Good.